Welcome back to the Sustainable Business Podcast, the podcast where we talk to small business owners about how sustainability is shaping their industries and helping them grow. Today, we're talking about one of the greenest ways to get around, the humble bicycle. No petrol, no emissions, and almost zero carbon footprint. So behind these bikes are the people who keep them working. And one of those is Dave Han, founder and owner of Motorlegs Cycle Workshop in Cardiff. Dave, welcome. Thanks so much for being our guest today. This workshop is the embodiment of kind of, I suppose, everything that's green and wonderful about this world. There are cycles all across the ceiling. It's a sight to behold. So can I just ask, how did you come up with the name and how did you set up Motorlegs to begin with?
Well, actually, the Motorlegs name predates the business by about 5 years. I was a keen cyclist. Mm-hmm. And a good friend of mine was doing the iconic ride from North Wales to South Wales, and he's a musician and he's a bit of a music fan, and it just popped into his head this name, Motorlegs, and as opposed to the band that he was into, Lemmy, Motorhead, that kind of thing, and. We said amongst ourselves in a small group, oh, somebody should come up with a logo, and we can put it on our jerseys. And one of the people did, and it was a bit scary. It was a bit, the logo looked, it looked more reminiscent of the classic No Remorse album and a little bit scary. So I thought, oh, that's not right. So I came up with this very simple logo, which was just a couple of bits of clip art stuck together, the chain ring, the skull, and of course that sort of gothic type text around it. And the plan was to put it onto a jersey. Well, years later, when it was time for me to set up a business fixing bicycles, it was what the Americans call a no-brainer. It just had to be that. To this day, people mistake and misread. They think I'm fixing motorbikes. I had a young boy call me yesterday saying, oh, I've gotten an E10 error on my bike when I turn it on. I said, sorry, I fix pedal bicycles. I suppose I was a bit flippant when he said, well, why is it called Motorlegs then? I said, well, that's because of what I named it.
And it's your passion as well, which is amazing.
I wanted something catchy. In the first couple of years, I thought, oh, okay, I've got to build a brand, because I came from a corporate world, and I thought, oh, I've got to build a brand. And about a year and a half into it, another completely different friend of mine went, Dave, they're not going to the brand, they're going to the guy. And that makes sense to me. I quite often draw parallels between what I do and what my mother used to do, which is hairdressing. People bring their bikes to me for a trim.
I love that. So all these years on then, how many years has Motorlegs been going now? And how did you come up with the idea, first of all, I suppose?
Well, it was about 11 years ago. I was, at the time, working for Children's Services at the department of the local NHS. And I was, already well into cycling, and I wasn't really very happy in my work there. And a friend of mine was setting up a cafe, a cycle cafe, and I helped him. It was a guy I knew through the cycle campaigning, and I helped him to set up his cafe, and I sold him the idea of getting his cakes and savouries from my wife, who was a baker. And when he turned around and said, Dave, do you know anybody who would like to mechanic for me? I nearly had his arm off, By then I had already retrained, qualified as a mechanic. It was 6 months in the setting up of his business. And then I worked for him for 6 months. As a mechanic. After that time, for various reasons, he decided that he didn't want to have a full-time mechanic. And he said, Dave, you better set up on your own. Well, yeah, I did. So I established Motorlegs Limited in December 2017. Mm-hmm. And I'm into my eighth year in this workshop. I met my landlord, and he said, we should be working in my place. You know, it's a workshop, and where's that? Oh, it's in Tudor Lane. At the time, I was a bit, Tudor Lane, really? Because it had a bit of a reputation, and, years ago, I did live just a couple of streets away from here. So I knew the area, and I knew how rough it could be. But, you know, Richard, my landlord now, said, it's changing. It's coming up. It's going to be much better. And he was right.
Yeah. And it's just a hub of small businesses. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, we've met a few of the ones on this road, and it just amazes me every time I come here, actually. The camaraderie, the fact that you all work together, and it's just, it's fabulous, actually. It's how, I suppose, small businesses used to be on the high street.
Well, you know, I agree about Tudor Lane. I'm so happy to be part of this community. When I was much younger, I did run an IT business, and I was too young to run the business then. I started this. I think I was about 46 when I started this, and and I did move into this lane, and my landlord gave me an offer that was really, really good. He's very, very kind and gave me, very, very affordable rent. And the day I moved in, neighbour from two doors down welcomed me in, gave me a cup of tea. I thought, oh, this is nice. I think it was 2 days after that I met Rob at Little Man Coffee, who had opened up 3 weeks before me. So I think a lot of things were happening. I think, Aid, who we spoke about, and Rich and a couple of the others had moved in about 3 months before me. So it was like just really good happenstance.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a neighbour next door who was a jobbing sculptor. And Nigel Talbot used to use this room as his studio. Until the guy who was doing panel spraying next door decided to sell up.
Yeah.
And Nigel bought the property next door. Well, again, lovely, lovely guy. Lovely community. You know, I don't know if you've spoken to John Grundon down the road, but he's got a business that does sculpture, faux taxidermy. Incredible work. And John was, we've got to get together. You know, we very, very often, all of us business owners share a cup of coffee at Rob's in the morning because, Little Man is a nice place to be. We were talking about collaborating on marketing ourselves for years. We did hold that community quite important, but it didn't really happen until more people moved in. Mm. Just across the way in the old transport club, we've got Sustainable Studios. And it's, of course, when they moved in and opened up the Canopy venue, it was kind of like a critical mass.
Yeah.
And now we have open workshops regularly, and it's sort of self-organised.
I mean, that's wonderful, because the thing is about, we talk to a lot of business about what they're doing to be green, but actually a key part of being sustainable, as you said, is that community feeling, people learning from each other, businesses learning from each other and collaborating. I just think it's just wonderful, actually, and the fact that you're part of that, I think is really strong. One thing, obviously, we kind of talk about in this podcast is obviously you as a small business owner, because there's that aside. So as a small business owner, obviously you've grown a successful business here in quite, I imagine, a bit of a niche as well. How have you found kind of running a business in today's world, I suppose?
Well, when I was younger, I didn't have the hard head to run a business. Now, it's quite challenging to run a business. But I've always been about people. and about community. I mentioned a hairdressing salon. A lot of my business practice I got from my mother, because I'm very about people. When I set this up, you know, focusing on the community thing, it had to be about community for me. You know, I'm never going to get rich doing this, but I don't have to squash my personality. Now, I worked in the corporate world for many, many years, and it didn't make me happy. This makes me happy.
In terms of customers, what type of customers, where do people hear about you, how do they come to you, what type of things are they looking for?
Right, well, it's been a journey. Yeah. Okay, when I started, something I would do a lot was sit in Rob's coffee shop and somebody would come in. I said, nice bike, where'd you get it serviced? Start up a conversation, and they come to me. As I say, I'm 8 years in now, and it's got to the point where I can, dare say, curate my customers.
Nice.
I've got many loyal customers, many repeat customers, families. We've got an active travel school within a mile and a half. And lots of those families have cargo bikes, which need regular service. All of those kids have bikes, you know, whole family, you know, that. And I've got customers who are quite serious competitive cyclists doing things like Ironman, duathlons, triathlons, all of those people. And I make sure that this workshop puts out the best possible job that we can. Quality, we don't rush jobs, we take our time, we do them well. And I get repeat customers out of that.
Yeah, because of the wonderful work that you do.
I don't have to spend vast amounts of money on advertising. I do get offers to spend vast amounts of money on advertising very regularly, and I just don't need to. Word of mouth is fantastic. If you're honest and you do a half-tidy job, and you're transparent about what you're doing. I mean, I learned lots of these lessons from my family, you know. A little story which, I've got loads of little stories, but a little story which I tell a lot is that when I was young, my dad used to like to take us out for a meal. And he always used to say, never go to a restaurant where you can't see into the kitchen. You know, and I say that to my customers. Of course, they understand that I don't hide anything that I'm doing. Many of my customers will do a lot of their own work, but they appreciate that I've got the specialist tools and the ability and the experience to do the things which they can't do. So they come to me for that. Some of my customers are just not interested in fixing their bikes or cleaning their bikes at all. So they are regular repeat customers. And the happy circumstance of that, take myself back around to what I was talking about earlier on, is if I get somebody that has got a bit of a cronky old bike and they clearly can't quite afford to keep it on the road, then occasionally I can do a job for free. You know, I can help people, and I can have a sliding scale on my pricing plan, and make things affordable, and I can afford to give certain people credit, and you know, because as you say, the bicycle is a humble device, but it's a thing which allows people to travel. You know, it's the major means of transport for many people that otherwise would not be able to get to work.
No, exactly. So things like I was reading on the website, you know, that the cycle to work type of thing, do you get involved in that type of initiative? Have you supported, do the Welsh government or any governments do enough, do you think, to kind of promote that type of sustainable travel, really, isn't it?
Cycle to work scheme. When I was working in the NHS and I was on a salary, I signed up and, you know, bought bicycles through that three or four times over the years. It was great. It was a salary sacrifice. So a company bought the debt. I was able to lease purchase my kit. And after a year, I made a final payment and I owned it. As a business owner, it's very, very difficult. My profit margins are quite small. If I was selling a bike for £1,000, which is the target amount for a cycle to work scheme, £100 at least of that would go to the company that runs the cycle to work scheme.
Right, so margins are tight then. Yeah.
Margins are, it's barely worthwhile for me to run the cycle to work scheme. I have sold about 5 or 6 bikes over the years through Cycle to Work Scheme. But that's, I've never really made any money off selling bikes, new bikes or old bikes or second-hand bikes. Mm. But if I sell a bike to somebody, then I gain a customer because I can service that bike, keep it on the road.
Can I ask, is there any bike that you couldn't work on and make and bring back to life, do you think?
Some of these Chinese e-bikes with bespoke, unique, unobtainable electronic systems, very hard to work on, and I do regularly turn away homebrewed e-bikes. There are people around that will work on those, and I'm very happy they exist because I can point the prospective customer in their direction. As far as general cycles go, because of the way I work, the way my mind works and the way my hands work, I like an engineering challenge. I've worked on bikes. In fact, I've got a bike here which dates back to 1935. There's a bike right here which I'm pointing to. It's a Rally Clubman. Left the factory in 1947.
We know
that because it's a one-year-only bicycle. And it is pretty much complete and all original. I like working on old bikes. I also work on very, very modern bikes. The range is huge. There's a problem in the UK. A friend of mine from the Netherlands said to me that Dutch people, when they go out to buy a bike, they spend as much as they possibly can. British people, when they go out to buy a bicycle, they spend as little as they possibly can.
It's a false economy, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, on the continent, a bicycle tends to be built and then priced to the build, whereas in the UK, bikes are built to the price, and so the quality is very, very poor. Many people got this idea that they don't like cycling because they didn't want to spend more than, you know, £100, £150 tops. And it's cyclical. I mean, no pun intended, but my dad used to be a cyclist back in the 50s, 60s. When he became a managing director he got a car and he didn't cycle again. And that seems to be the way it has been in the UK over the last 50 years plus. It's, you know, a car is a status symbol. There's a big road lobby. And cycling is second. I mean, that's despite, you know, the Wiggins effect, you know, and Geraint Thomas who's just retired, and all of that boom of sports cycling. It's still, if you're a cyclist, you're kind of a second class citizen in the view of many. But for me, cycling, I've been involved with a charity called Pedal Power for over 20 years. And I realised while working with Pedal Power that cycling is so good for so many people in so many ways, physically, mentally, socially. When you're out on a bike, if you have difficulty making eye contact with someone, it's okay because, you know, it's you're going somewhere together. You have an experience. If you don't want to be with people, you can be on your own. For me, I'm my discipline. I was a long distance cyclist. I'll go off on a weekend and I'll do 100 plus miles on my bicycle, and I get out there, and it's the absolute best thing about cycling for me is it's a communion with nature. Mm-hmm. It's the closest thing there is to flying.
Love that. I love your passion.
Yeah, absolutely. The passion is why I run a bicycle shop. Yeah. Back to the founding of Motorlegs. It was founded, one, because I couldn't work in that large environment where I was fluff on the wheel. I'm a big picture thinker, and I some people need to work in a small box and focus on the thing they're doing. Because of the way my mind works, I can't do that. I don't have to be involved in the decision making, but I need to see the bigger picture, how the machine works. You know, I suppose it's why I love bicycles, because you can see the whole machine. I'm pushing that metaphor a bit, but I am pretty much a big picture thinker, and it's not that I can't compromise, but I don't have to compromise. No. And I don't have to squash my personality. When I did the career change, I was coming out of a period of not being very happy. My father had passed away after a long illness, and I you know, through my children were moving to adulthood, and I felt I'd squashed my personality for a long, long time. When I decided to do this at the age of about 48, I decided that I was just going to be 100% myself.
Yeah.
And if people didn't like it, then that would teach me something.
Yeah.
So it's driven by passion. I mean, I love this workshop. It is you can just be yourself here, and you're immensely talented. I think it's just amazing. If I was to ask you then, I mean, you're very fortunate in that you're a business owner and you've turned your passion into something that you can give back, you can give people back, and you can use your talent and your skills to do that, which is amazing. If you were kind of giving some advice to someone like yourself, a younger self, I suppose, and you were starting a business, what advice would you give, do you think?
I was going to say, don't do it. not to a younger person. Although, you know, if a younger person has the right headset, then, you know, mindset, then they could do it. I mean, it is extremely tough. I would not have been able to get this business going without help from an organisation called Business Wales. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine told me about a friend of his who worked for Business Wales, and I went along to one of their workshops, and I was quite cynical, mainly because I had a long, a distant memory of an organisation called Cardiff and Vale Enterprise, and I'm sorry to just use crass words, but there was a guy in a three-piece suit saying, oh yes, I used to run a business. And he started talking about Barrow Boys and cash in their back pocket, and it was just like, it meant nothing to me. I was shocked, surprised and refreshed when I went to about 9 years ago, I went to Business Wales. We sat down. I went through the workbook. The business mentor went through my workbook. I went in. We had a meeting. He said, right, you need a business plan. Let me write it with you. And you need a cash flow forecast. And this is what you need to do. And this is the money you need to borrow. And this is how you do it. And that was tremendous. Then for about 6 months, I got over the start of my business. He would parachute in. Sit down where you are now, talk to me about how things were going and what he thought I should be doing. And I listened to him, I took his advice, I acted on his advice, and
Here it we was, are.
And here we are. I mean, you know, other things have happened since. I mean, we've been through a pandemic, which was a boom for the cycling industry. There have been, for the bigger part of the cycling industry, it's been quite bad. But for small businesses like mine, I mean, at the peak of it, I was employing 4 mechanics here. I didn't really notice any reduction of work through lockdown because I'm repairing bicycles, so it was a protected business, and I actually did service and repair bicycles for doctors, nurses, other health workers, as well as the people who were not allowed to do anything else to exercise apart from get on a bicycle. So there was a real boom.
Yeah.
So that was an opportunity, really, that came out of, you know, something awful that happened. But as you say, so since then, though, what's changed, do you think?
Things are changing all of the time. I mean, actually, to give somebody that was starting off in business some good advice, it'd be like, bend with the wind. Don't be rigid. Be prepared to change. Have a plan. Have an idea about where you want to go and what you want to achieve. But be prepared to change because goalposts move every day.
Can I go back and ask you then, when you were talking about Business Wales and getting some advice, at that point, was the Net Zero Challenge a thing then? Or have you had any support since then in developing that side of things? Have there been incentives, anything like that, to help your business? Because by its very nature, you know, what you do is help towards that, I suppose. But just wondering from a policy point of view, whether you've actually had any support at all?
No, not really. Net Zero is a thing that we're aware of. I mean, when I was 15, you know, and I'm 56 now, I remember somebody coming to school and saying, oh, we've got 10 years worth of oil left. I have not been the recipient of any government scheme benefit in any way whatsoever. I've never been very good at getting grant money or money off the great and the good. Again, which is why I was so flabbergasted to be given a very affordable loan for startup. And of course, the bounce back loan was tremendous for me. And those things have been good. But it's about just not growing quickly, keeping it small, keeping it organic, growing organically. And you know, not everything I've done has been successful, but it's you give things enough time to see if you can make it work, and then if it doesn't, well, you cut your losses and you just move and pivot and move in a different direction, you know. But the core of what I do has always been being straight with people, being clear with people, showing people how to maintain their own bikes and doing that service work for them. And just being honest and amenable. Nobody can be universally liked. Again, this is when I was young and naive. I used to think that everybody, you know, I wanted to be liked by everybody. No, I don't have to be liked by everybody. I just have to be honest and part of the community and do as best as I can.
Yeah. And 8 years on, look at what you've done. You must be pleased with what you've achieved. On a good day,
I can sit here and think I do love this place. You know, I love what I do. But it's still work. You know, it's still a job. That thing comes in a lot. People say, "Oh, it must be wonderful working here because you do what you love." And so it's not work. Well, it is work. It's still work, you know, and you still got the major difference between working for somebody else and working for yourself or running a business is if you run a business, it's your job to worry about running a business. If you're working for somebody else, they have to pay the bills. They have to pay the wages. If I don't make the bills, if I don't make the wages, that's, you know, and even 8 years in, even with a successful, profitable year this year, things could change 3 weeks and I'd be into a loss. So it's just about keeping it up and playing the long game. You know, I work with some good people. I've got a great accountant. I've got people who support me. I've got people who like to come in and learn and give me hours for free. I keep my wages bill down as low as possible. I watch the overheads on a daily basis. You know, yes, it is green and it's sustainable, but, you know, I don't really want to burn fossil fuels. I keep the lights on. I've changed all those to being LEDs. I don't have any heat in here. That's not my decision. I don't have any running water here. That's not really my decision. At least I do have running water now. I've got a local plumber to put it in. But, yeah, it is...
Very low carbon footprint all
around. It has to be. It has to be sustainable. And I can make the choices and you know, yes, if employing people here, I'd have to keep the room to a certain temperature and all of that kind of health and safety stuff, which I do take seriously. But at the moment, there's one employee here. So.
Well, Dave, I think your story is you're inspiring. It comes from the heart. You can feel the passion that you know, when you're telling the story of where you've come from. I bring my bike here and I shall carry on talking. But thank you so much for your time. It's been so interesting. And if people wanted to know more about Motorlegs or where they were to find you, is there a website? Is there a number they can call?
Motorlegs.com is the place to get in touch. Our hours are and will remain to be for the foreseeable future 10 in the morning till 6 in the evening, Monday till Friday. I prefer that people use the website to book a free bike check, but people can just rock up. I like meeting people. It's the reason why I've got a coffee machine down the front and free drinks for customers that come. It's because I love meeting people, you know?
You can tell that through and through.
I like meeting people more than I like fixing bikes. And I love fixing bikes.